Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment. All right, and welcome to this week's episode of Better Construction. This week, I am lucky to have with me Andrew Oding. Andrew is Vice President and Director of Building Science at Building Knowledge Canada. He has a long history in our industry, working as a builder for over 20 years, and now working on a number of different technical advisory boards shaping future building codes and high performance and better construction options for everyone in our industry. So, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sean.
That's great to have you here. So you were a builder for, I think, 20-something years is what your intro was saying. Why the switch into building science? Or maybe it's not as much of a switch as it might look like.
Yeah, it's sort of like going to the dark side, you know, to the building science side. So yeah, I sort of grew up in a family that was involved in construction. I'm originally from the state of Michigan and had grown up working with a grandfather and family who were builders, built homes in the summer during when I was in high school. And ended up moving, eventually living in the North Carolina area, working with a partner down there, and then moved to Canada in 1999, late 99, and started working for a large production home builder at that time, Reed's Heritage Home, and was there for about 12 to 13 years. And I think the thing that caught my interest was obviously working for the home builder. I was director of operations, and before that, quality control, construction manager, did all sorts of things there for a number of years. But the thing that always intrigued me was there was always a reason for the things that we would see. And I loved the science behind it. And sort of around the 2004, 2005 mark, I had gone to a Houses That Work session in the U.S. that's done by the Environmental and Energy Efficient Building Alliance. And I listened to these people like Tex McLeod and Joe Stebrook, Dr. Joe and Gord Cook. And it was just fascinating because all of a sudden they were making sense of all the stuff we see in the field. And I started to drink the Kool-Aid, ended up then in 2008 and forward going back to University of Toronto. They have an excellent civil engineering and building science program there. Got my Building Science Specialist of Ontario designation, and the opportunity came up eventually to come and work with Gord and the team at Building Knowledge about 8 years ago. And I just feel like I couldn't be more fortunate. So.
Very interesting. So having the background that you go, I guess starting out, how did you get into construction in the first place? Like, was that always the plan growing up, or becoming a builder was not?
I at one point had the idea that I wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay.
And that didn't work out very well. But it was always something I'd sort of returned to, you know, like I said, in high school in the summer working, going to college in Michigan. Still returning in the summers to do work on construction sites, and had enjoyed it. And then just as life sort of evolves, you learn that you can actually end up making a living doing something you enjoy. My background really was in the field. Like I said, I can remember the days of my grandfather showing me how to run 10 penny nails, you know, nail heads up in your hand, son, here's your 24 ounce a hammer, and make sure you can roll the nails off your fingers in time to hammer them. But yeah, that was sort of my background. Then, of course, I had the privilege then of being a partner in a business in North Carolina, and then working with a company here in Canada, and sort of working in all aspects as a builder, from purchasing to doing some sales and marketing work, and then looking after operations. So
very cool. So then you got to Building Knowledge Canada. And for those listening who don't or aren't familiar with the company, what does Building Knowledge Canada do?
So Building Knowledge Canada was sort of incorporated, I think, about 12 to 13 years ago. Originally, the company had started and was known as Air Solutions almost 32, 33 years ago by Gord Cook, Gord and Linda Cook. And Gord was one of those original building science guys working with HRVs and ERVs back in the day, the 1980s, trying to help people understand why you needed fresh air in homes. He was involved in the original early days of the R2000 program. And anyways, that company grew, Air Solutions grew as an equipment manufacturer. Or not manufacturer, but equipment representative for mechanical equipment. Gord got into blower door selling as well. And but anyways, years later, then obviously as R2000 took off, Energy Star came in, there was an opportunity to be a company that does not just energy evaluations, but also forensic work on energy and building science work on homes, as well as mechanical design, mechanical forensic work, and consulting and training. And Building Knowledge was sort of the offshoot of Air Solutions that developed into that company.
Very interesting. It certainly seems almost standard agnostic. There's a lot of different high-performance standards out there. R2000, Built Green, Passive House, Net Zero. If you're a builder, if you're talking to a builder for the first time and they come and say, hey, you know, we've got this project, the homeowner's really interested in building a little bit better than code, how do you kind of guide them through that conversation about which standard might be a fit for what they're looking to do?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, it's always here's all the labels, where do you start? It can almost be overwhelming. Our guiding principle here at Building Knowledge is we believe that every builder is capable of building homes that work, homes that are healthy, homes that are going to last, and they're capable of doing it for the same or nominal cost. And we don't try to pigeonhole. I mean, we say don't try, it doesn't work. And we try to pigeonhole a builder to a program. A lot of the times, whatever program they end up getting involved with just comes naturally. We do have clients coming to us saying, you know, I've heard about Passive House, or I've heard about Net Zero. What can you tell me? So we'll share with them what we know of those programs, or they'll come asking about, LEED, what's happened with LEED and the Living Building Challenge, things like that. So we'll share with them what we know. And a lot of the times we just start out with those clients working towards better built homes. And as they advance, they find out, hey, actually that program over there might work for them. You know, I sort of like the deep dive that Passive House takes. Or they might say, you know what, there's Net Zero's just right for me. Or some might want to go more all encompassing with a larger, I'm going to say a broader mix of sustainability measures like Living Building Challenge. So, but again, fundamentally, what we want is we want the builder or the client to be able to end up with the most comfortable, healthiest home built with true building science principles at the end of the day, regardless of the programs.
And so let's take that kind of journey to the next step, the builder, or I guess maybe take a step back might be a good place to start. What is the right phase for those types of the discussions to happen? Like if you had your ideal say, when would a builder or architect come to you in the design and process?
Well, a lot of what leads these discussions these days for ourselves and even folks like you, Sean, is codes, right? We now have energy codes. And let's remember that it's relatively new. It wasn't until 2012, really, in that time frame, that Canada had a minimum code for homes on energy efficiency, 936. In the States, it was as recent as 2009. ICC was really the first time that there was an energy benchmark for homes. So since the inception of energy codes, you get architects and builders saying, okay, I know I've got to meet this energy thing. How can you help me? And that sort of starts the discussion. What is really cool is they'll come to you with that first, you know, concern that it's going to raise the cost, or they're going to have to do some wonky sort of solar panels and all sorts of things, you know. And what you get them to is, wait a minute, I can actually meet code if I do this right and use good science for less cost than prescriptive measures. And at the same time, we, as Building Knowledge or yourself, get to expose them to building a little better. And a lot of the times we find that the builders can't help themselves, but once they learn about Building Knowledge and learn that there's a benchmark, there's just something in us by nature that wants to do a little better. And it's just sort of a transition. We often say that, you know, building to performance levels to meet the building code is sort of the hook. And once we get them on the hook, we start introducing them to programs or other projects that have achieved certain things, and they find it easy to move up then. The one thing we find very compelling these days for the discussion, of course, is now not only do we have an energy code, we also now have a proposed tiered energy code that basically puts a flag in the sand in the future here in Canada that says, here's the end game, which is net zero ready. And like any product out there, if you put a flag in the sand out in front of that industry or product manufacturer that this is, let's say, the end game, there's going to be a certain percentage there and going to go, all right, let's see if we can do it right now. And that's sort of what we're seeing.
Yeah, I definitely am seeing that as well. Do still hear from a lot of people in different areas of the country, not as much out in BC because we've kind of jumped ahead and that's what we're doing. There is still a pretty lively debate that happens around required codes and voluntary standards. I've heard you wade into that on different panels that you were on, and I'm kind of curious, where do you sit on that spectrum?
I tend to I will tell you, I prefer to let the market drive itself. I think there is a place for a proper and appropriate, careful regulation as far as codes go. But I do struggle with codes that try to drive too quickly to an end game. I'll talk openly about these tiered energy codes. I'm involved on that standing committee. I've been involved with some of the work with, ASHRAE 90.2 and some of the development of those standards. But I'm often very cautious from being a builder and from working with builders that they're good goals to have, but let's be thoughtful when it comes to engaging the entire industry to move there. Let's encourage a certain part of the industry to go there and let them do it and get recognition for it and work some of the bugs out. But when we try to drive it too hard, we end up with unintended consequences. And that is a huge concern for the industry. I mean, we've done well over 300 net zero projects in the last year and a half, just our team. And they're everything from large community scale sites to one-offs. And they're right across Canada and some in the US. And our biggest concern and the lessons that we continue to learn is if you move too quickly with doing things in the name of energy efficiency and you don't use a thoughtful building science-based process, you end up with unintended consequences. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I would prefer that we move thoughtfully. I've used the example of, we often hear this term, we have a climate emergency. And I'm not going to argue with that. I feel like we do have more than an urgent situation on our hands. But I think we also have to be aware as rational beings that, now I'll give you an example. I sometimes use it for people. I have a brother-in-law that's a firefighter. And, the example he shared with me is many firefighters lose their lives over the course of a year due to something called tunnel vision. And when you are in a emergency situation, sometimes we panic, the cortisol starts to flow, we can't see the options, and we try to move too fast, and we end up having an issue. And that's my fear with codes that are moving too aggressively is just hold on, let's do this thoughtfully, let's do it carefully, let's support those that are moving ahead thoughtfully, but let's be timely in moving the entire industry by virtue of the building codes.
Yeah, I would agree with you on a lot of those points. I think that I've heard well-reasoned arguments on kind of both sides of that spectrum. You know, the people saying that it should be part of the standard, the code, sooner rather than later, saying that because obviously it is a good goal. There's kind of an inherent value in it. And also they make a valid point, I think, that by having it not the standard, the builders who do choose to build to that standard can be kind of penalized by right. The fact that there are others that are able to build to a lesser standard. That said, I agree also that we have to put this in place in a way where the education is there for builders, the products are there. And most importantly, I think, and this is what I want to get your opinion on, is the market, and in this case, the market being the actual end consumer of the product, the homeowner, understands the value. Because something I talk about with a lot of my guests is how to get that end consumer, whether it's a consumer that's known because they're hired a designer to build a product, or whether it's a spec home that's being built or tract homes that are being built and they don't know who the consumer is. How do we educate those people the importance of building better versus material finishes and those types of things? Because there's very few builders that just inherently would automatically put a stone countertop in a kitchen. They do it because it's going to sell the house better. So how do we make building better attractive in the same way?
That is like the $1 million question. The good news is, in my experience, we've seen it answered. And we do see builders starting to figure the answer out to it. We're an industry that's very slow to learn. We're very slow to change, even in productivity measures, marketing. We think we're great marketers. We're really not. We often market based on what our peers in the industry tell us. One thing you'll hear from Gord Cook and a number of others that have been in the sales and marketing industry for 30 or more years, and one thing I learned as a builder, you know, building our company built well over 1,000 units a year during some of the high production years, doing single detached multifamily, is we found out very quickly that this whole thing of, you know, Energy Star, LEED, net zero, high performance buildings, that the conversation and the things that mean the most to the homeowner are a very different conversation than what we have internally as a builder with our trades. So for instance, what the homeowner wants, you know, Suzanne Shelton, Shelton Group often uses the example. The homeowner actually doesn't want, you know, a 3/4 inch drill bit. They want a 3/4 inch hole. So, you know, stop telling them about the 75% HRV that you have that, you know, has ECM motors. Stop telling them about the 95% efficient furnace and tell them that you have a fresh air machine that's going to help them be healthy and that you have an amazingly quiet air distribution system that's going to help them be comfortable on every floor of the home. So it's about learning to talk in the benefits as opposed to the features. Department of Energy in the U.S. has done studies, and again, we're all slow to pick up on this, but they've done a number of studies through the Build America program and the Zero Energy program stateside. Sam Rashkin and team, they even built a building science translator for sales and marketing people in the U.S. of how to translate bits and pieces in high-performance homes into understandable tidbits for the homeowners. And the other mistake we make is we try to sell these homes based on cost savings. And as a builder, we would say, well, the reason I'm doing that is because that's all they ask about. And what we found out when we watched the sales transaction take place was the reason that builders think that the only thing clients are concerned about around energy efficiency is cost savings is because that's all they know to ask. They don't understand that what you're trying to give to them is a product that works better, it feels better, it smells better, it's quieter, and oh, by the way, it happens to be efficient. And you know, all those things about comfort and health and quality and durability are emotional conversations. And as Gord Cook would say, and Suzanne Shelton and others, those are the things that sell the homes. It's not the logical. You've got to satisfy both. But at the end of the day, the thing that makes people move is if you're giving them a product that they makes them smart, if you give them a product that they're proud of, if you give them something that they are sure is the best, they're likely to take it.
I agree with that. And I think that, you know, as you know, I'm quite involved with Passive House and Passive House Canada. And when the Passive House standard came back, because it started here kind of, but it came to Canada. One of the big challenges they had was exactly that. They were trying to sell these buildings based on the fact that they use 90% less energy than a standard building, not realizing that there were a couple of factors working against them. One, in Europe, energy is considerably more expensive. And so that's much more important than it is here, as we have relatively cheap energy. And two, people don't naturally respond to that. They don't, you know, their heating bill is going to be 90% less. Okay, well, I don't really understand what that means. Now, if you tell that person that is buying a condo in downtown Vancouver, that they can be on the corner of Hastings and Skeena and close their window and not hear the outside anymore, that is something that they care about. Or if there's fire season, they're not going to have smoke in their buildings. That's something that matters to them. So I think that that's super important, and you hit the nail on the head for that one for sure.
Yeah, but it does. It takes us a while to learn this. And, you know, I find it so fascinating. We are creatures of forgetfulness. And what I mean by that is I've heard Gord and Tex McLeod and others say, oh, we had these same conversations back in the 80s, you know, after we survived the oil crisis and learned a lot of unintended consequences. We learned all these things. And it's like, well, you know, we're relearning them all over again. But it's very promising. I think these days with social media, health, I think the time is coming now where I think the message is finally getting across to the builders, to the people that market homes and buildings. And we're finding a consumer, obviously, that's much more knowledgeable, much more challenging, but also expects a lot more too. We often, you know, use the phrase when we're doing training, you know, we're in the building industry, you know, codes seem to move really fast. And we, Gordon, I've asked this question now for, you know, 8 or more years. We'll be in a session with builders in the US or Canada. It doesn't matter where you are. And you get the same answer. You'll say, what's moving faster? The building codes and the rigor or the expectation of the homeowners? And all the hands go up. It's always the homeowners, you know, their expectations are so high. Well, it's not them, it's us. That's our expectation. And it is changing. And the builders that are figuring out how to match it, they're winning the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's going to continue to expand, especially as some of these new devices come into more standard use, where people are able to really easily see their indoor air quality and see what the, you know, the oxygen levels in their home are and those types of things. If people are able to visualize that, all of a sudden they're going to start caring more than if it's just, I feel kind of drowsy, I'll open a window.
Yeah, that's right. You know, sort of off on the topic, I mean, and I hate that it's taken this experience with COVID to make us have these honest conversations sometimes about the health of our homes and buildings. But one thing is sort of has been interesting for me is, so we built a net zero home now about 5 years ago, my wife and I, and we have 4 children. And she has a compromised immune system. And so her doctors have been asking, okay, what type of environment are you in? You're going to need to be careful. Do you know what the relative humidity is? Do you know what the temperature is? Do you know what your ventilation rates are? And it's sort of cool because all of a sudden we can say, yeah, this house is, look at there. We have, you know, 300 to 400 parts per million for oxygen versus carbon dioxide. So, you know, lots of fresh air. We have 41 to 44% relative humidity, even during some cold, dry spells. All of a sudden the building science matters. And I think we're going to see more of it.
Yeah, I agree. So switching gears a little bit, I'm curious to hear from you. What are some of the most common challenges that you find builders run into when they are looking to implement one of these new standards, whether it be net zero or passive house or et cetera, for the first time?
I think the biggest thing that a builder runs into is the internal resistance to change. And that's their own teams. It's their own trade partners, and the builders that do it successfully go through a period of onboarding their trades and their teams. I remember the day, you know, when I was starting to get geeked out about this building science thing, the best thing we ever did was to start to have all of our company, you know, there was 300 plus staff, everybody plus our trades, we'd have them come in for a half day of just building science and where codes are going. And after that half day, you could see that they were open now. They started to get it. They started to be engaged. And it's like it's companies that start to help their trade partners and staffs learn that this is a learning experience. They're the ones that are succeeding. And then you don't have that internal resistance to trade to change as much. The other one, too, is lack of, I'm going to say, skilled trades. But not just skilled trades, but knowledgeable trades with building science. You know, so the day of being able to call up a drywall contractor and expect he's going to toss in the air barrier with the poly for you and maybe toss in, you know, doing some of the insulation in the attic and, oh, by the way, he's going to do your board and tape for you. Those days are very limited. We now need contractors that, yeah, you're going to have them come in, but by the way, that poly and tape is the air barrier. And by the way, we're going to expect that when you're finished, that the level of air tightness will be such and such. And we're going to expect that you're going to have trained individuals that understand what they're doing. So that has been a challenge. We see a lot of our larger clients are starting to ask us to go and do training for their trades. And I'll say it's sort of thrilling because a lot of the trades have been open to it. You know, just a half hour on a Thursday morning or 1 hour on a Friday morning, you know, a couple months in the summer, and it starts to get them changed around. The other part that I think has been very challenging is things like cold climate air source heat pumps, highly efficient HRVs with ECMs, good distribution systems, small duct distribution systems. The technologies are there. we don't really need any new technology, CO2-based air source heat pumps, air-to-water systems, CO2-based. The technologies are there. The issue we're having is the distribution of those technologies and the acceptance of them. You know, we see CO2-based systems for air-to-water coming in on the coast out in Nova Scotia and PEI. They're being used. The biggest issue we have with them here in Ontario is we don't have a whole lot of mechanical companies that know how to work with CO2-based systems.
No, yeah, that's definitely an interesting challenge. I think that there's a need within the industry for a lot of different parts of, you know, the supply chain to kind of step up when it comes to that. You know, 5 years ago in Canada, there was one Passifos, for example, certified window manufacturer. Now there's, I believe, eight. Right. And, you know, everyone else was bringing them in from Europe and, you know, these types of things. But even, like you said, just the knowledge of working with these systems, like with our products, our guys in the field spend a lot of time doing field training on air tightness. You brought up an interesting point, though, of who is responsible for the air tightness layer. And that it's the challenge on every project, because is it a mid-wall air barrier? Is it an external focused, internal? What are you starting to see with that? Are there certain trades that are really taking that on, or maybe it's going to be its own trade?
Yeah, I think any of what you just said is going to be possible. The one thing I feel safe in saying is that we have seen the air barrier control layer start to move to the outside of the building. Now, we've seen that more on commercial, because when you look at it holistically, you know, you take up the penetrations and the servicing and the construction of the structure of a building. And by keeping the air barrier on the interior, you've got 45 to 55 different types of penetrations you're going to have to deal with. When you move it to the exterior, you're still going to have penetrations, but you typically cut the number of penetrations in half. Now, different set of trades, but you're limiting the opportunities for failure. So we are starting to see that in the commercial. In the residential, we're starting to see it as well. Little by little, air barriers moving to the exterior. One of the fundamental things I think that we've seen start to happen is finally, at least in Canada, thank goodness for Canadian building science and contractors, is that we're starting to have educated conversations with trades and designers and building officials about what is the air barrier. I mean, sometimes we think, well, is it the house wrap on the outside? It looks sort of tight, so let's tape it up. And well, we still have poly on the inside with caulk and tape, so let's do that too. And when we're not able to really say what is the primary air barrier, we end up missing all the stuff in between. But that conversation is changing little by little. The other thing, too, that has happened is the National Building Code of Canada has actually started to put more explicit wording and identifying some helpful additions in even the appendix of the building code to sort of help with that conversation. You know, you've got, I would say, like for a lot of the products that you folks are using, it's phenomenal because you're able to use products that, you know, help with an air barrier on the outside, but they also at the same time address water management. And we find as a builder, there's nothing more powerful than if you can do one procedure or one application of a control layer, and that control layer now can actually do two things instead of one. And you know, and I think that's why we see a lot of systems like Zip and some of these others so popular, because in the builder's mind, he's like, okay, it goes on the wall once and I tape and I'm done. Now, I have concerns with some of those systems if they're not done correctly. There's some building science things that I have concerns with, but I get it from a builder standpoint.
100% agree. And I also have seen a big shift in a lot of the airtight projects that we're working on towards an exterior, especially on the residential scale, kind of two-story typical residential home. Like you said, the WRB has to be on there anyways. And so if you're upgrading it slightly and putting some tape on it, it works. And you don't have to worry about that transition between floors like you do with a vapor barrier-based air barrier system. Yeah, there's different ways to look at it for sure.
Yeah.
So with the podcast, I always have two questions towards the end that I like to ask. And one is for me personally, and one is it typically is a pretty fun question. So I'll start with the fun one. If you had a magic wand and you could fix any one misconception about better construction, what would it be?
Oh, boy. There's two things. One is I would make sure that all the trades, the designers, contractors, anybody involved in building in a cold climate, so zones 4, 5 and north, would always remember the principal reasons, the building science reasons of why we have air barriers. And we often forget this, but the reason air barriers went into the building code regulation was to minimize interstitial condensation. It was not to reduce energy. Reducing energy came after the fact. And we sort of, when we forget the fundamental reason for having something like that in a building element, we get off track. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we don't get water in the walls. So that to me would take care of a lot of issues, and we would all start from the same base. The next thing, don't be afraid of putting insulation on the outside, for goodness sakes. I think we're done with this. I hope we're done with, oh, the walls got to breathe conversation. Okay. Walls, number one, don't breathe. I mean, look at some of, you know, Allison Bales has written some really good articles lately. You know, yes, assemblies need to dry, but there's more important things. Control water management from the outside. Number two, stop the air leakage. Number three, control the first plane of condensation. And then worry about some of the other stuff.
That definitely answers it. Those are two big ones. I mean, if we could fix that, that would solve a lot of problems. Then the last question I always ask is a personal one for me. I collect books. I love books. And so if you were to recommend a book, personal or professional, what would be kind of a go-to for you right now?
Oh, man. So there's one on the business side that I would recommend. It's a book I'm just sort of getting through right now. It's actually recommended by Gene Myers, who's the CEO of Thrive Homes in Colorado. So Gene, they won the NHBA Builder of the Year Award 2 years ago. They build net zero, zero energy homes as a standard. They compete with all the national builders and do incredibly well. And his go-to book was The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack. And it is a very compelling book. On the building science side, you have all the good stuff by Straub and Stebrook and the rest of them. There is a brand new online book that Robert Bean has just put out there on LinkedIn on thermal comfort in residential homes. And it's available through Robert Bean's website. You might know Robert. I mean, I'm sure you do. He's, you know, former chair of ASHRAE 55. And so he's put this manual out there, and it is phenomenal. A lot of the stuff we talked about today are baked into there. And, you know, to Robert's point, if we changed one fundamental thing about the building code in Canada and the US or globally today, we could solve the energy crisis overnight. And that is, if we decided to design to preserve occupant comfort and health, overnight, we would have airtight, well-insulated, well-ventilated, appropriate lighted homes and buildings.
Wow. Yeah, those both sound like great recommendations. I'm definitely going to check them out. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show today. For everyone listening, I'm going to go ahead and put links in the show description and below to Andrew's social media, as well as Building Knowledge Canada's website. Andrew, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Hey, Sean, take care and keep doing what you're doing.